Beyond Us and Them, podcast on radicalization in the times of social polarization. Welcome in the podcast of Resilience Through Education for Democratic Citizenship Project, shortly called REDE. My name is Filip Pazderski, and after a while we come back to the discussion on how social polarization and radicalization threaten our democracies. Today we will look at how we can use tools of education to counteract anti-democratic tendencies and even violent radicalization. And in this respect, we have with us Patrycja Chlaczyk. It's nice to have you with us today. Ms. Patrycja Chlaczyk is a director of POLIS, which is the Austrian Center for Citizenship Education in Schools. She has many years of expertise in citizenship education and human rights education as well. So once again, hello.
Hello, Filip. Nice to be here. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it is also a pleasure for us. Thank you for accepting our invitation. So maybe to start with, if you can maybe explain to our listeners actually what the institution you manage is and what you are doing.
Yeah, thank you for giving me this opportunity. POLIS is the Austrian Center for Citizenship Education in Schools, which means that we are the main service institution for citizenship education in Austria. The center is run by the Vienna Forum for Democracy and Human Rights, and it is partly funded by the Austrian Federal Ministry of Education. We are based in Vienna, but we are responsible for the whole country. And our task is to bring as much citizenship education into the classroom as possible. We do this by, on the one hand, giving advice to teachers who want to do projects in school. We are an advisory center. We have the largest information platform, online information platform in Austria. We are developing new materials for the classroom on a regular basis. And we are doing teacher trainings together with the teacher training colleges and the universities. We're from time to time also organizing events for students, but as we are a small team, we usually focus on teachers and hope for the snowball effect and that they then work with our methods with the students. And in the last years, we also increasingly were involved in European projects. And in the last two or three years, I would say that they are always focusing on increasing democratic competences. And many times we refer to the reference framework of competences for democratic culture of the Council of Europe in these projects. And just to give you perhaps a short impression on what kind of materials we are developing and what kind of topics we are taking up. Our task is not to reproduce what teachers can find in a textbook. Our task is to take up things that are discussed in society at the moment. So actual current topics, controversial issues, things that are not yet in a textbook. So things that teachers would have difficulties to find materials on or to find lesson plans for. So we try to help them to bring these discussions into the classroom as fast as possible.
Okay, so I can imagine that maybe one day you would have to add to your textbooks maybe a topic of maybe vaccination and how all these decisions around vaccinations are connected to how our democracies are working. Probably it could be good case study to discuss.
That's true, yeah. And actually, if you look at history textbooks, you already can find information about vaccination because the history of vaccination is one of the successes, you could say, in public health. And the current discussion about vaccination, you can't find it in the textbooks. You have to develop new materials. And we actually did one issue of our teachers' magazine on public health, And we also developed lesson plans where teachers can discuss the pros and cons to vaccination, for example.
Okay, great. Sounds very interesting, but let's get back to the main topic of our discussion. And before we will go more into the deeps with the issue of education and how to use it, I wanted to ask you about your perception of the main issues in which we are trying to do something with in a RADE project, that is violent radicalism and extremism. So if you can just tell us a bit more how you perceive these issues, these tendencies, to what extent they are important in your country, Austria, and in Europe as well.
Well, to start with, I would like to say that I'm not a specialist in violent radicalization and extremism. I'm a citizenship educator. And not a specialist in de-radicalization, which is very different from prevention work, I would say. But of course, the topic of radicalism and extremism is something that is very closely related to my work, because we consider democratic education or citizenship education to be important to prevent processes of radicalizations. And I would say that at the moment, there are different facets of radicalization and extremism that we face in Austria. I think most of them very much like all over Europe, I would say. As you may know, on the 2nd of November last year, an Islamist attack took place in Vienna. It was the first attack of this kind in Austria, and naturally a great shock. And from then on, it was clear that we are no longer what we in Austria call the so-called island of the blessed. So we now know that there are radicalized people among us and that we have arrived in European normality, I would say. But even though there is this Islamist extremism in our country, I wouldn't say that we have a very, very massive problem with it. It is here, it exists, and we have to deal with it. But what I perceive is that we have a massive problem with right-wing extremism, anti-Semitism, and xenophobia at the moment. These attitudes have become more or less acceptable in parts of our society through the very strong Freedom Party in Austria. And in the last years, also due to the conservatives who try to copy the Freedom Party because they want to be attractive for the voters of the Freedom Party. There was a saying in Austria that we don't have a problem with right-wing extremists on the street because in our country, they are in the parliament or in the government. Currently, the Freedom Party is not in the government, but of course, they continue to agitate and they are also important drivers now in the corona protests in our country. Due to our history, you may know that in Austria exists a so-called National Socialism Prohibition Act. This is a law dating from 1947, and it was part of the denazification process in Austria. It is still in place, and it is an important pillar of our democratic identity, I would say. And it prohibits Holocaust denial, as well as trivialization of the Nazi atrocities and of reactivating these ideas. And at the moment, we are seeing an increase in violation of this prohibition law because many neo-Nazis are also marching at the demonstrations against corona measures. So all in all, at the moment, we are observing, I would say, an aggravation of the tone and increasing aggressiveness also of parts of the population and an aggressiveness that is also very close to becoming violent also, really violent. We see this in these demonstrations also. So there is a lot of dissatisfaction with the government's work on the pandemic on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is lots of fear within the population. And these two things are bringing together protest groups that usually have little in common. There are the vaccination skeptics, there are the corona deniers, there are the neo-Nazis and other right-wing groups. And there are also people who are just concerned. So this is a very dangerous mix because it's very unpredictable how this mass is going to act. So I think to summarize this a little bit, I would say that Austria, like all European societies, is facing different sorts of extremism and radicalization. And at the moment, I have the feeling that the situation is not getting better.
Okay, so as I understand, as you already said as well, you are especially an expert in this prevention stage, so preventing people to enter into the path of becoming more radicalized and adopting extremist opinions. So could you maybe explain a bit, basic on your experience, how we can use education in this process in preventing people to get more radicalized and then possibly also using violence if they will go further in this process of radicalization?
Before I come to that, I would just like to mention another thing. You know, when we face these threats as a society, governments usually have the tendency to respond to these threats with a security discourse. And I'm not completely opposed to this. It is very important that we have good laws against violent extremism. It's very important that we set clear limits and apply the laws. But this is not enough. It is only a signal that the state can send. But this doesn't change the fundamental attitudes of people who are radicalized or in the process of becoming radicalized. And when we talk about education, I think we have to distinguish between those people who are already radicalized and those who are perhaps on the way to become radicalized. I think that those who are already radicalized or already acting in a violent way, they can no longer be reached by very normal educational measures. They have to go through de-radicalization programs, for example. This is a very specific and difficult work. And I can't say much about that because I don't have this expertise, but it's very important. And those who are on the path to radicalization, and these people are still accessible to educators or social workers, I would say. And even there, I think that specific expertise is needed, which not every teacher or youth worker has. Because education can, of course, do a lot to prevent people from becoming radicalized, because education can empower people. It can give people the tools they need for a good life. It can take away feelings of powerlessness. But education alone, I have to say this also, is not enough. Our societies are characterized by great injustice. Think about how many people in migrant societies do not have the right to vote, for example. Our representative democracies are no longer representative. This leads to the fact that people are no longer interested in politics or no longer have the feeling that they have a say. So, combating these violent extremist attitudes is a task for society as a whole. And it can only succeed if it does not only target the individual, but also the entire democratic system. So in my opinion, education can only be one part of the necessary reforms that our societies need in order to become places where people are no longer vulnerable to radicalization, you know? So if we want to succeed, of course, we have to rely on education and we have to believe that education plays an important part. We also see that it plays an important part, but we also have to modernize and rebuild our democracies, I think.
Thank you very much. You know, it's very funny because normally, I mean, or quite often at the open discussions about democracy and when people are being asked what to do to repair our democracy, the first question is education, yeah, better education. And you being an expert of education, you say that yes, education, but not only the education. And I mean, in general, I totally agree with you, but I just find it interesting. But let's talk about on education. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Because... But let me say one last sentence regarding this. Citizenship education is not a fire brigade. You cannot call citizenship education when something terrible happens. We cannot repair things that are going wrong in the society. It cannot be the task of teachers to repair everything that goes wrong. We can prepare people to participate in society, of course, and let's just talk about this also, of course, yeah.
Okay, I can only sign with my both hands under what you just have said. So, but if we can focus on education and especially on preventing those people that are only entering the path of radicalization. Could you tell us a bit more what kind of especially because you also said that we have to prepare also teachers and educators or social workers. We work with social workers, especially in the RADA project. So if you can explain us what kind of competences all these educators, because we can treat them as educators, all of them, I think, what kind of competences they would need to work with those tendencies that we just have discussed about?
I think that one important thing is that teachers and all kind of educators need constant training on these issues and that they need a place for developing the competences they need in order to foster democratic competences in young people. Because you cannot foster democratic competences in young people when you do not have these competences on your own. And democratic competences are not competences that you just like this develop once, but developing democratic competences is an ongoing process. So there is a deep need, I would say, to give teachers the possibility to reflect on these things, to reflect on what kind of teacher do I want to be? How do I want me to be when it comes to my own democratic professional ethos? Moreover, I think that it's also necessary that teachers and social workers also have the time to reflect about the limits of their job, because the job they are doing is really a very important and a very hard job. Discussing controversial issues in classroom, for example, and taking the time to discuss this with young people is not something easy. It is important, but it's not easy. You have to create a safe space where the students feel free to talk about the things that move them. You have to create a space where everybody is able to articulate his or her opinion. And you have to find ways of bringing together very different opinions and establishing a culture of discussion. So this also needs lots of, I think, experience, and it needs lots of competences for teachers to enable such a learning setting. And of course, there are limits to their job. They can discuss the things, but they cannot solve the problems. So. This is also a very difficult thing. If you think that maybe the students in your classroom, they experience quite a lot of injustice in their lives. Then you can discuss it in the classroom, but you can't take away the injustice. So the situation outside school, the discrimination, the racism they are experiencing, etc., this will stay. You have to be very clear about that. And you have to be very clear also about the fact that sometimes maybe you come to a point where you say, well, this is too much for me. As a teacher now, I reached a limit. I need a social worker who is going to help me. I need a psychologist who's going to help me. So I'm a great fan of establishing a network, seeing the school as a community player who has a network of supporters also to foster this democratic culture in school. And I'm also a great fan of establishing a whole school approach, which includes that not only talking about democracy is on the agenda, but that also democratic structures are installed in schools. Because we know when young people experience real participation, they are later on also willing to participate. When they experience self-efficacy, they will become stronger. They will people who will be interested in participating in social and political life. So there is a whole bundle of things that you have to consider as a teacher, but also as a social worker when it comes to democratic competences. And I think that teachers really need time for reflection, because usually as a teacher, you are alone in the classroom. So it's extremely valuable for teachers to talk to other teachers, to have the time for reflection, the time for learning from each other. And I think it's the same for social workers.
Thank you, especially for these two observations that we just have made. First of all, about explaining how difficult work teachers have, and important at the same time, because we tend to forget it. I have this impression. And secondly, about suggesting that it's important to think about this having holistic approach, and because of that, or for that, creating this kind of local coalitions or local groups of different stakeholders cooperating with each other. But can you maybe add to that a bit more by explaining in what way we can still prepare educators for performing this kind of activities? What kind of maybe education methods or formats you find useful for this matter in order to prepare these people to be able to go a bit more easily through this difficult work?
It's always very difficult to describe concrete methods, because usually it's better to just try methods out or to do it in a playful way. But I think that what I would see as an important thing is that teachers learn to adapt, for example, a participatory approach in their teaching. And that they learn what real and meaningful participation means, that it is more than only giving information to students, and that they learn to integrate this into their teaching. Not only citizenship educators, but every teacher should be able to integrate this into his or her teaching. So taking into account what the students think, what they want, and discuss this together with them, and giving them the opportunity to make choices, to really bring in their own views. And I think it's in this regard, I think it's just important to know about the basics of the concept of participation, for example, I would say. So this is a very important thing. I think that it's in social work, usually it is very central and in the non-formal context. And I think that in the formal context, perhaps it's not yet so much established because if we compare educators in the formal context and in the non-formal context, I would say that social workers and youth workers usually are not considering what they do as an educational activity because they're more in the logic of doing interventions. And when they work with young people on an ongoing basis, because the young people they work with are there on a voluntary basis mostly, it's much easier for them to apply this participatory approach. And the formal system as a very formalized system has more difficulties in integrating this participatory and democratic approach. So I think this would be very important to foster this.
Could you maybe explain a bit more why, or maybe if you are to persuade some of the social workers that do not perceive themselves as educators, why do you believe that they can be considered and they should consider themselves as well as being educators, especially while working with the youth?
I think that it is actually, well, I didn't make too many trainings with the social workers, but I imagine that it's quite easy to convince them that what they're doing is an educational work and that it is something that fosters democratic competences. Because in my perception, social and youth workers are much more politicized than teachers most of the time. And the motivation to go into the job is even more the motivation to make people's lives better and to make a contribution to a good life. So I think it's only a little step to bring them, let's say, from to bring them to the reflection that what they are doing is educational work, or at least in some way fosters educational work. So I think that it's more about just reflecting what they are doing and not so much about improving what they're doing. I think the new quality would be that they have a new sight on what they're doing, and that they perhaps are then doing it in a more structured way when they apply the methods and formats that they use in non-formal education. So I think it's not really a difficult task. It's just something that has to be done and that maybe has to be fostered. But actually, I think it's very close to the mandate also of social and youth workers, as far as I see.
It would be still rather this non-formal education and maybe also afterwards this informal one. So also this education that happens all the time, that we are like cooperating with each other, and then we are learning these social competences on a daily basis as well.
A lot of the competences that you can consider to be part of the democratic competences can be seen as transversal competences, I would say. Because conflict resolution skills, the ability to listen to somebody, tolerance of ambiguity, self-efficacy. So there are a lot of competences that are not only important for democratic competences, but it's something that you can use in your whole life. So I think that there are many things that are overlapping.
Okay, since you already listed few competences, and I have impression that there might be many more, could you maybe name any kind of like point of reference for you that is the best one, where somebody interested can see what kind of full list of competences, like the ideal democrat should possess or try to develop, maybe?
Well, actually, there are many frameworks of competences, but the one that we used in the READY project and a very recent one and a very comprehensive one is the Reference Framework of Competences for Democratic Culture of the Council of Europe, which can be found on the Council of Europe's website. And it's already translated in many European languages. So I think that everybody could find it, or not everybody, but most of the people can already find it in their languages. So this is a very comprehensive model, which shows which values, which attitudes, which skills, and which basic knowledge you need in order to develop democratic competence. And we should always keep in mind that usually when we solve a problem, we are not only activating one competence, because if we only activate one single competence, we will not find a solution. We always activate clusters of competences. So we activate competence of listening to somebody at the same time as the competence to solve a conflict, or the tolerance of ambiguity, or my sticking to the value of human rights. So there is always a whole bundle of competences that is activated. And in this interplay, the democratic competence is developed then.
I think it is also important to say that this framework is also presenting this a process of becoming a democrat, that probably there are very few people, if any, that is at the end of it, probably, because it's quite developed.
Well, as democracy is not a static concept, so democratic competences neither can be static. So hopefully we will further develop our democracies, and hopefully we'll also further develop our democratic competences, of course, yeah.
Okay. Before we start to wrap up our conversation, I also wanted to ask you about maybe any kind of like your personal advices to any people that would like to become involved or maybe are involved in training other people, especially social and youth workers. So what they should remember about, or maybe how they should prepare, and or anything else that you find important.
In my experience, in trainings, it is extremely important to give a lot of space for self-reflection and exchange. Talking about what works and what doesn't work. In my trainings, very roughly said, I would say that there are three parts that I try to consider. I always try to bring some theoretical backgrounds. Then I try to bring in some practical methods so that the transfer into the classroom is guaranteed. And then I'm giving lots of space for self-reflection. And if I look at how my trainings developed over the years, I would say that I increased this reflective and self-reflective part a lot. I used to have a focus on practical methods because this is always great fun. Everybody likes to try out new playful methods, and this is sort of just playing and getting new tools for the classroom. But as I mentioned before, this reflection about my own professional ethos and the reflection about what works well and why it works well, and also the collective reflection in teams, that's something that teachers really need and that they like, and that really helps them to improve, I think. So that's one of the things I think is very important in trainings.
And do you maybe know any interesting projects or maybe any interesting resources people that would like to extend their knowledge in trainings, they should go and see, or maybe try to check and copy some of the ideas or solutions or maybe methods as well?
Well, as I just said, that it's always great fun to have a look at good methods. I have to say that I am still a fan of the good old Council of Europe Compass and Composito manuals. So whoever doesn't know them by now should have a look at these manuals. They were issued some years ago, but and I think that the Compass also was reissued last year or 2 years ago. But this is really a fantastic collection of methods that can be used in school and also in the non-formal sector. I would highly recommend these. I think for those who are interested in having more theoretical background, I think that the Lemon courses of the Council of Europe, the self-learning courses, are very good because they take up different aspects, for example, intercultural learning, also democratic competences, or very simple things like how do I welcome a new learner in a classroom? How can I make assessment in a democratic classroom, for example? Well, and of course, I think that I can recommend the handbook of our READY project, where people can find a lot of new and old methods and a compilation of things that are really ready to use.
Yes, and actually, there will be also some reused methods taken from Composito and Compass.
Of course, yeah.
As well, yeah, so we can definitely recommend it to everybody that are interested. And I also understand from what you just have said that it's not always that this more like developed methods are useful. Sometimes it's good to come back to the basics and even use very simple methods that can be still useful.
Yes, of course, we do not have to reinvent the wheel every time. And of course, if we have a look at a certain method, we always have to adapt it. So usually a trainer doesn't use the same methods more than once because it is used in a different context and in a different way each time he or she uses it. So it's always a new method then.
Okay, so maybe with this very detailed concrete recommendation, maybe we can close this discussion. So thank you very much for being with us, Patricia, and good luck.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you.